It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
This month's book is Cold Comfort Farm by Stella Gibbons. First published in 1932, Cold Comfort Farm is Stella Gibbons' first and most successful novel. The story follows the adventures of Flora Post, a young woman with a small private income and a steely outlook on life. Following the death of her parents, she is faced with the prospect of trying to live on £100 a year, an amount that won't keep her in stockings and fans, as a friend points out. Instead, she decides to move to the Sussex countryside to stay with her distant cousins, the Starkadders, who live on Cold Comfort Farm. The invitation she receives from her Aunt Judith leaves her puzzled and curious, referring to a great wrong done to her father in the past and warning her she is coming to a doomed house. Intrigued rather than put off, Flora heads for Sussex.
But her resolve to sleep late into the next morning was partly frustrated by a shocking row which broke out below her window in what she, muttering sleepily and furiously from her bed, described as the middle of the night. Male voices were raised in anger, coming up out of the blanket of dead, sullen darkness, pierced by the far-off shrilling of cockerels. Flora fancied she knew one of the voices.
"Shame on thee, Muz Reuben, to bite the hand that fed thee as a cowdling. Who should know the wants of the dumb beasts better nor me? 'Tis not for nought I'd nursed our Pointless when she was 3 days old and blind as a wren. I know what's in her heart better than I know what's in the hearts of some humans." "Be that as it may," shouted another voice, strange to Flora. "Graceless has lost a leg. Where is it? Answer me that, you dithering old fool of a man. Who will buy Graceless now when I take her down to Beeshorn Market? Who wants a cow with only 3 legs, saving some great old circus man looking round for freakies to put in a show?"
There was a piercing cry of dismay.
"Never put her Graceless in one of them circuses! The shame of it would kill me, Muz Reuben." "Aye, and I would too, if I could get hold of anyone to buy her, circus or no circus. But no one will." "Aye, 'tis all the same. Cold Comfort stock ne'er finds a buyer. With the Queen's bane blighting our corn, and the King's evil laying waste the clover, and the Prince's forfeit bringing black ruin on the hay, and the sows as barren as come ask it. Aye, 'tis the same tale everywhere all over the farm. Where's that leg? Answer me that." "I don't know, Miss Roman, and if I did, I wouldn't tell 'ee. I know what goes on in the hearts of the dumb beasts without spying round on them to see where they leaves their legs from morn till eve. A beast needs solitude, same as a man does. I take shame to myself, Miss Reuben, to watch over them beasts like you do, a waiting for dead men's shoes and a counting every blade a sparring and mouthful of dumb beasts eat."
"Aye," said another voice meaningly, "and counting the very feathers the chickens let fall to see no one mix off with them."
"Well, then why should I not?" shouted the voice, cowled Miss Reuben. "Do I pay ye wages, Mark Delore, to steal the chickens' feathers and carry them off into Beersham and sell them for good money? I don't sell the feathers. May I never set hand to plough again if I do. 'Tis my Nancy. I take some warm to my Nancy."
"Oh, you do ye? And for why?"
"Ye know well why," returned the third voice sullenly. "Aye, ye told me a pack of tales about trimming dolls' hats with a good shaking feathers, as though there was no other use for them feathers them chickens drop than to trim the hat of a lot of idle, worthless dolls. Now hark ye, Mark Delore."
Here, Flora found it useless to try to pretend herself back into sleep any longer, so she got crossly out of bed and felt her way across the room to the glimmering grey square which marked the window. She pushed it open a little wider and called down into the darkness,
"I say, do you think you would mind not talking quite so loudly, please? I am so sleepy, and I should be so grateful if you would."
Silence, emphatic as a thunderclap, followed her request. She felt, half asleep as she was, that it was a flabbergasted silence. She hoped drowsily that it would last long enough for her to drift off into sleep again. And it did.
Cold Comfort Farm is a large, sprawling, muddled estate inhabited by a large, sprawling and muddled family. Nominally ruled by Amos Starkadder, known as Brother Amos for his flamboyant religious preaching, they stumble through life, weighed down by strange guilts and deeply suppressed longings, with the exception of Seth, who is the only family member to leave the farm and mix with outsiders. Everyone else is too afraid of Great Aunt Ada, a semi-mythical figure who watches from a top room, ruling the family from afar. Thrown into this feudal setup, Flora quickly begins to bring about changes, affecting everyone from Big Business the Bull to Great Aunt Ada herself. The book is a parody of Victorian pastoral fiction, where the beauty of the landscape and the honest toil of rural folk are turned on their head. This could be a very gloomy book, but in fact, it is filled with wonderful characters and twists of wry humour. The misery of the farm is so extreme as to be laughable. Nothing grows. The animals, who have names like Feckless, Aimless and Viper, refuse to flourish. And because everyone believes the place is cursed, no one makes any effort to actually change anything. It was a bestseller when first published, and has been extensively reissued ever since.
It was 5 o'clock on the afternoon of the next day. The weather had favoured the cousins. Flora had pessimistically presumed that it would be pelting with rain, but it was not. It was a mild, rosy spring evening in which blackbirds sang on the budding boughs of the elms, and the air smelled of leaves and freshness. The cousins were having a fiendish business getting themselves dressed. The intelligent and sensitive reader will doubtless have wondered at intervals throughout this narrative as to how Flora managed about a bathroom. The answer is simple. At Cold Comfort, there was no bathroom. And when Flora had asked Adam how the family themselves managed for baths, he had replied coldly, "We manage as we're out." And the vision of dabbings and chillinesses and inadequacies thus conjured had so repelled Flora that she had pursued her inquiries no further. She had discovered, however, that that refreshing woman, Mrs. Beetle, owned a hip bath, in which she would permit Flora to bathe every other evening at 8 o'clock for a small weekly sum. And this Flora did, and the curtailment of her 7 weekly baths to 4 was by far the most unpleasant experience she had so far had to endure at the farm. But this evening, just when baths were needed, baths were impossible. So Flora put 2 enormous noggins of water on the stove in the kitchen to get hot, and hope for the best. Her absence from the farm with Elphine had not been commented on. She doubted if they had noticed it, what with the bull getting out and Miriam, the hired girl, having so far got through the spring without entering upon her annual interesting condition, and the beginning of the carrot harvest, which was even longer and more difficult to do than the swede harvest. The Starkadders had enough to absorb them without noticing where a couple of girls had got to. Besides, it was their habit to avoid seeing each other for days at a time. And the absence of Flora and Elphine seemed fortunately to have coincided with one of these hibernations on the part of the family. But Aunt Ada, did she know? Elphine said she knew everything. She shuddered as she spoke. If Aunt Ada found out that they were going to the ball... She had best not pull any Cinderella stuff on me, said Flora coldly, peering into the nearest noggin to see if the water were done. It is just possible that she may come downstairs one of these evenings, said Elphine, timidly. She sometimes does in the spring. Flora said that she hoped it kept fine for her. But she did rather wonder why the kitchen was decorated with a wreath of deadly nightshade round the mantelpiece, and large bunches of the evil-smelling pussy's dinner arranged in jam jars on the mantelpiece. And round the dim, ancient portrait of Fig Starkadder, which hung above the fireplace, was a wreath of a flower which was unfamiliar to Flora.
It had dark green leaves and long, pink, tightly closed buds. She asked Delphine what it was.
In later years, Gibbons was somewhat ambivalent about Cold Comfort Farm. She once compared it to an elderly uncle, the sort you were grateful to for a decent income, but who was a bit rough and embarrassing out in public. She produced a sequel, Christmas at Cold Comfort Farm, in 1938, and wrote and published 30 other books during her lifetime. A number of these have been reissued in the past few years, and a television version of Cold Comfort Farm has reawakened interest in her work. Hailed by some critics as the Jane Austen of the 20th century, Gibbons is a witty and clever writer. But more than that, she has a clear-headed view of society, and her humour is sharp and even cruel on occasions. If you are new to her work, do begin with Cold Comfort Farm. If that's all you've read, then try some of her other books. You will not be disappointed.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer, scholar, and commentator, with another classic book of the month on Southside Broadcasting. Crime writer. That means she authors the crimes. She's the mastermind behind the crimes. Oh, is this recording?
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
100. Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225
grams of magnesium. Hang on, slow down.
And one tablespoon. Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you, any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
Indeed. And it's Jenny and myself for the Book of Mouth, because Rob Nichols didn't quite manage to get around to having a really enjoyable experience, actually, in terms of the Stella Gibbons number Cold Comfort Farm. Although I don't think, Jenny, it was necessarily echoing the writings of Jane Eyre and company, or shall we say the
That's
Brontes?
The Brontes.
Exactly, yes.
Jane Austen.
You're quite right. Interesting line, of course, with one of the main characters from Cold Comfort Farm, who is portrayed by Stephen Fry in one of the incarnations. That's Mr. Meyerbug, or Mr. Myberg, who was obviously trying to produce a thesis to prove that actually none of the Brontes had actually written any of their work at all.
No, absolutely.
Exactly, which I thought was quite an interesting...
What a senseless waste of human life.
Written in the 1930s, of course, Stella Gibbons herself, I think, born at the turn of the century, 1900, and sort of worked through that. A lot of similarities between Stella's biography and her work and regular sort of partings with companies, etc., and the character Flora Post, I felt. I felt there was an awful lot of similarity. If you read the lines of Stella's father, who seemed to be doing not necessarily there or doing very little, but you know, there did seem to be an element where I could see the way in which we're first introduced to Flora, which... seems to be somebody who's very much one of the privileged, as perhaps War might have said, one of the vile bodies, almost borderline vile body at the
time. Well, yes, there was actually quite a debate at the time when Cold Comfort Farm first came out, and a number of male critics insisted that Stella Gibbons was a pseudonym for War himself, and said that he had written it.
I could see that would be, yeah, that could be understood. But clearly we can actually deny that, because Stella kind of went on to do a whole range of other bits and pieces within that field. But yeah, I felt it was an enjoyable, pleasant read, in the sense that the whole adventure was a pleasant read, and also it resonated very much with experiences I've had about people living in rural areas and the mixture between town and country. I was minded of... my first ever trek to see some of the relatives on my mother's side, on the McCormick side of the family, in Ballinafad in near Sligo, back in the 1970s, where actually father was so shocked that they didn't have electricity in the farm, he actually spent his holiday actually fitting out electricity for them, and it was a whole new routine. And again, there was the notion of what was the... And whereas I suppose there wasn't the dark elements of the whole thing, certainly there was that sense that, well, this is how it's been, this is how it's always going to be, why should we actually clean the curtains? We've got other things to do other than clean the curtains. Or the classic line, I suppose, Adam, when he's actually presented my Flora with a bright, shiny washing brush and mop, thinks it's too wonderful, too lovely to actually use on dishes, so carries on using the twigs.
Yes. Don't walk on the new carpet, which is 20 years old. You'll get it dirty.
Precisely.
Yes.
So lots of elements coming across from there. I thought there were wonderful characters that certainly resonated with me. Maybe if it was a mild criticism from the point of view of Gibbons' use of technology, where at times I'm thinking, oh, why don't they use rocket packs? Everybody seems to have their own sort of aircraft to fly in and fly out on, effectively. I thought that might have been stretching it a wee bit too far. But a very pleasant read, and that sounds damned with great criticism. It's a bit like saying, oh, it's very nice. We don't have fun. We find it amusing or diverting, as one of the characters actually said, portrayed by Joanna Lumley in the series. Who was your favourite character, Jenny?
I rather like Seth, who is the one who
went off to Hollywood.
Went off to Hollywood, lounges around.
He's the talkies.
A loosh lizard, that
exactly.
man. Absolutely wonderful.
Breaks his mother's heart, obviously.
Absolutely. And takes no notice of great Aunt Ada, who adores him, is the only one. And reminds me very much of one of the final characters from Absolutely Fabulous. The only one of Saffron's children that Joanna Lumley likes. I thought, yes, I could see him being that.
And that, of course, that notion of I suppose, meeting up with a Hollywood producer in what, again, was very much part of London culture at the time, that the character Flora Post would have included the cinema club. And the whole notion of the cinema club was you'd actually go to see the film, you'd actually talk about it, it would be a social aspect. It was a way, I think, originally set up by people who are actually doing newsreels to actually start beginning to deconstruct what newsreels were. And early documentary filmmakers, the likes of the Crown Film Unit, and indeed... The I forget the early, not Robert Flaherty, but Flaherty's work would have been considered and discussed and worked through that. So I thought there were lots of lovely touch areas where there were, as I think you said when you were trailing it ahead last time, Jenny, this is not a period novel as such. It still has a lot of contemporary resonances. It brings to mind what's happening in the 1920s and 1930s in a certain aspect of society which isn't being impacted or affected in any noticeable way by the Wall Street crash, by the rise of fascism, by all of the other challenges that are actually sort of present at the time. So I think from that perspective, it kind of carried with it lots of echoes of the Larkin family, for instance.
Yes.
Darling Buds of May. That sort of notion where you could read it on holiday, you could read it as a sort of nice sort of pleasant read, and it would be a pleasant, diverting read. Is Flora Post too much of a Pollyanna character? Is she? And because I love the line of the higher common sense, the way in which would be in the pensée, the higher common sense, which is there, which I think is actual text you can outline from that, and her focus on that, and clearly ensuring that everybody actually works on the higher common sense and structures, because clearly the farm itself moves from the time when she arrived, where she sees it as a challenge, she could have gone on stage with other relatives, to when obviously she ends. Is it too good to be true? Would you like to see a little bit more grit? I mean, I personally would have liked Flora to possibly just done all the good stuff and then basically sort of rode off into the sunset without any kind of relationship, and actually had that sort of slight melancholy that she's done all that effort, she's done all the energy, whereas actually I thought really what we get by Gibbons at the end is Flora herself even flies off into the sunset with her bow and so on.
Yes, I think it's interesting that at the very beginning Gibbons says she's only 19. She's amazingly self-contained for 19. Okay, there are reasons for that. She grew up in boarding schools. She hardly saw her parents. She's had to be self-sufficient. But to go into that enormous, sprawling family, either incredibly stupidly or incredibly fearlessly, that's a little bit implausible. I find that a little bit difficult. And in some ways, it reminds me of A Town Like Alice, where the outsider goes in and puts the whole town to rights and builds an entire economy. It's a sort of smaller version of that. In that sense, it is something of a fairy story.
Well, hence the line of Pollyanna, the sort of notion that, as Hayley Mills sort of incorporated that, somebody who's basically brings wonderments to the whole world. Yeah, a bit like Rob Nichols brings wonderments to all Borough fans, whatever their state
always,
of mind, really.
Works to me as well.
Yeah, it's just a cool thing. Clearly, there have been lots of incarnations and versions of it. I think the last one, the TV version by Thames Television, actually, and BBC, it was a joint co-production, was actually 20 years ago now, 1995, when it was actually released, so over 20 years ago. And that was an early Kate Beckinsale who took on board the role of Flora Post, with a whole range of fabulous actors, Stephen Fry and Ian McKellen, and being just two of the fine folk are actually there. Do you think this time is right for another revival of Cold Comfort Farm? I mean, will it still be with us, or will people effectively begin? Will it fade away, or do we need this narrative to actually remind us that actually there are good things? Actually, and you might sort of have feckless, hopeless, and aimless and pointless as the four cows, and you may well have a situation where something nasty is in the woodshed, and all sorts of other areas with that. But ultimately, yeah, that kind of balance between. It's almost quintessentially English, can I say, after a fashion of quintessential English. I mean, because it wouldn't fit in Scotland. It wouldn't really fit in Wales. It wouldn't fit with a Celtic economy. But in terms of that Sussex or West Country area, I think they manage, you know, what Gibbons does, she manages to capture that really quite effectively.
Yeah, I think it's lasted very well since 1932. 14 of Gibbons' novels have been reissued recently. And I think if it's lasted this long, and her work has, I think it will carry on and possibly be more widely read, particularly as there is an element of escapism in it. And life is rather gloomy for a lot of people at the moment. And this is something that will lift your spirits and can make you laugh. And that's got to be good.
I was even quoting Gibbons at the Countryside Links outside broadcast we did recently at the Lincolnshire Countryside show as well, so I'll be working through that. Okay, it's just the two of us for today. What are the scores we're going to provide for Cold Comfort Farm? What would you go for, Jenny?
I go for 8.5.
And I'm going to go for 8 because, again, I thought, nice, positive, good scenario. How do you live on £100 a year, even in the 1930s? I don't know. It's a dreadful thing.
You throw yourself on the mercy of the Stark Adders.
Exactly, exactly so. What's up for the Book of the Month in May?
Book of the Month in May is Philip Pullman's first part of his prequel to His Dark Materials. It's La Belle Sauvage.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.